Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Hope you had a great holiday weekend. A little relaxation, a lot of turkey, a lot of football. It's a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Hope you had a lot of Coors Light or whatever your beverage of choice is over the weekend. I know I did because the Texans played on Thursday, so I got the rare Saturday and Sunday exacta off this weekend, as did Seth Payne, who is with me now. Hello, Seth.
Hello. Did you drink a lot of beer this weekend?
I didn't drink a lot of beer. I've been staying away from the beer since I've been getting on the weight loss kick because it's very heavy in carbs. Even the ones that are lighter in carbs have more carbs than, say, I don't know, six vodka sodas like I had yesterday starting at brunch and through the first wave of games. It was great. Yeah.
You know, one of those weird things that happens that probably shouldn't make you feel like an adult, but they do. It's not necessarily what you would want to hang your hat on. Usually, hey, feeling like an adult is it paying your mortgage, getting your credit rating in line, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. For me, it was I never quite understood growing up why people would say they would switch to beer when they wanted to cut back on their drinking. It just always sounded weird to me, where It took a couple decades, but I get it. I get it. They're like, oh, if I want to slow down, I'm going to go to beer. And because there's a natural, your bladder is a natural speed bump there.
Yeah, it is. It's a restrictor plate for you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you have a nice weekend, my friend? Did you get a lot of couch time and football time? How are you convalescing? You feeling good?
I feel good. I have very little pain, but I'm having a hard time coming out of general anesthesia, I think, for the first time in a long
time. It's been 6 days. Right, what are you talking about?
Well, I know, but it's there's a lag with some people. It's called post-operative cognitive something or other. And I think I might be suffering from it a little bit because I feel hazy and slow and kind of weird and out of sorts. So I'm just going to need you to do, ironically enough, after me undergoing hernia surgery, I'm going to need you to handle the intellectual heavy lifting well as any physical lifting around the studio. Not allowed to lift more than 20 pounds for the next couple weeks here, Sean.
Okay.
So intellectually and physically, you need to do the heavy lifting.
Thankfully, not a lot of manual labor in this job for a lot of reasons. So
The one good thing we can look forward to is that at some point I will – the pendulum will swing back into an extreme manic phase for me.
So good.
You'll go from trying to prop me up to like trying to slow me down.
Good. I'm here for that. Yeah. I'm here for that. So it's a Reaction Monday. The Texans played on Thursday. We got a lot of Texan stuff to get into. Seth, before I do have one Texan thing I would have to hit off the top, but before we do, I know you probably watched some football this weekend and watched yesterday. The late round of games yesterday, I think there were only three games in the late window yesterday. The Rams and the Niners, shove that one off to the side. The two that had intrigue for completely different reasons were Mahomes v. Brady and then the Denver Broncos playing without a real quarterback against a team who's using a backup quarterback who's not a real quarterback. Mm-hmm. On the surface, yeah, Taysom Hill versus the poor kid, the Hunter kid or whatever his last name is, that was on the practice squad 2 days ago because the Broncos quarterbacks couldn't wear masks in their meeting room. They got their entire quarterback room wiped out and the NFL said, game on. Which game were you more intrigued by, Mahomes versus Brady or two teams playing without actual real NFL quarterback? I know Taysom Hill is listed as a quarterback, and I know he's playing, you know, he throws the ball actually a few times a game, but he's at the very least kind of, you know, a souped-up Tim Tebow. Which one intrigued you more, the schadenfreude of watching an NFL team play without a real quarterback and complete one screen pass for the whole game, or the actual passing of the torch between Mahomes and Brady?
Yeah, I didn't even look at the Broncos game. I just, I mean, that's a write-off, right?
I watched the whole thing. It was fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I suppose I figured that I'd watch some of the highlights slash lowlights, and I enjoyed everybody saying, see, it's not so easy to play NFL quarterback. Like, that was ever an argument. I saw all these people, like, dunking on the straw man. I'm like, I bet you thought it was easy to play NFL quarterback. Well, this non-quarterback can't play it very well. All right, I guess... the squadron of people that are outside with signs in the parking lot saying NFL quarterbacking is easy apparently were disproven.
Well, okay, you say that, but I felt a little bit that way because I'm one of those people that does like that when there's bad quarterbacks, I'm very mean to them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if you're not one of the top 14 or 15 quarterbacks in the league, I'm basically coming on the show and saying how badly you stink. You know what I mean? Like I'll sit here and I go, Carson Wentz, he sucks. And this year his stats are terrible and he's turning the football over. But when you watch that poor kid play quarterback yesterday, a good athlete who actually has played some quarterback in his lifetime in college a while back, and he can't even complete anything other than a little flip screen pass to the left side of the field for an entire NFL football game. I do watch it and I go, okay, I sit here and I say how badly these guys stink and they suck. But it is really, really hard to do this. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just be a good athlete, throw him in. The kid didn't complete a pass other than flipping the ball to Noah Fant 5 feet away from him for the entire game. Yeah.
Because what would the equivalent be if you were a pretty good high school golfer or something and you stepped out onto a PGA course?
Yeah.
Like, with the fast greens and with a gallery of people around you.
That's a great example. The guy shoots an 83 and we're like, God, this guy sucks. He's terrible.
Oh, yeah. Like any of those guys. No, the worst is when you're watching golf and you're with the guy that's like, I've made that shot before. Like, once.
Right. I probably
sure
haven't.
You did one. Now do it consistently for four straight days, son of a bitch.
Yes.
So I didn't. I watched the Chiefs game because I've been standing for Tom Brady, saying like, "Hey, this is all going to turn around." And I found myself slowly and steadily hating Bruce Arians.
Where are you
more
now?
And more. Bruce Arians. I feel like Tom Brady. It's like Tom Brady's some woman who left her husband, who is a solid dude, for like the crazy rebel type that she met in some
honky
tonk at 2 a.m. Yeah, and she's
Brady
realizing after one long weekend that, oh boy, I've made a big mistake.
Yeah.
This guy doesn't handle his business quite like my old boring husband does.
No, the lights will be off in a month. Like,
she's like, honey, I'm really enjoying our fling here and everything, but did you happen to realize that you have warrants for your arrest?
Right.
That's what Bruce Arians, who's never been one for attention to detail or whatever, is more just like, hey, fling it downfield and everything will work out just fine, baby.
Yeah.
No, so much.
Arians is like a biker who's got five tattoos on either arm. He's like, I said I'd put you up an apartment. I didn't say I'd pay for it.
Arian is basically the, like, don't worry, my pullout game is strong, baby. That's Bruce Arians. Whereas, you know, it's not the same thing.
Do you think Brady, in his heart of hearts, blames Bruce Arians? Or is he having a moment of clarity where he's feeling like, I may not be Tom Brady anymore?
I think he's having a moment, and I think he probably would have anticipated this. There are certain things he wants to be able to do in the passing game that you're just not going to get done unless you have everybody on board, and that it's an organizational top-down thing where everybody is plugged in and on the same page and pulling in the same direction. It feels very much at this point like Bruce Arians and Tom Brady are trying to make the most of it, and yet they're just philosophically too divergent. And I don't know. I asked Brandy during the game, when do you think – if it were to finish up this way this season, do you think Brady would pack it in? And we both decided, no, there's no way in hell, because he's going to figure out a way, maybe over the course of the second half of the season he does, but he's got to figure out a way to get everybody on board and on the same page for next year.
They're on a bye this weekend, the Bucks are. Here are their last four games. Seth, they're 7-5 right now. Here are their final four games of the year. Home for Minnesota, at Atlanta, at Detroit, and then home for Atlanta again. Now, those are four teams that are all sub 500. But the Bucks are 7-5. They're not 10-2. And those are all teams, save Detroit maybe. You know, Detroit just fired Patricia. We'll get into that. But those two Atlanta games and the Minnesota game are not those aren't layups. You know what I mean? Yeah. Those are not easy games. Even though the records may make it look like they're easy, I think that the Vikings are 5-6, and the Falcons just destroyed the Raiders yesterday. So two games against the Falcons who are playing pretty well under Raheem Morris. If the Bucs go, say, 9-7, if they go 2-2 in those games, they're 9-7. That might not be good enough to make the playoffs in the NFC, because you got the NFC East champ taking a spot of what's going to be a pretty decent team, probably. If they don't make the playoffs, one of those two guys has to go, no? Either Arians or Brady? Do they
know? No, I don't think so. Think about the Falcons the first year that Kyle Shanahan was there, and he and Matty Ice, it's the dumbest nickname, weren't on the same page. And then they had a beer in the offseason. They figured out a few things. And this happens over and over again. Two things happen with NFL quarterbacks and coaching scenarios. One is that we completely overvalue a rookie quarterback's first 5 or 6 games. And it has people like saying things, or any young quarterback who's starting for his first time. There was a time where smart NFL people were saying Brian Hoyer was the answer in Cleveland, right, for instance. And the other thing that happens is that we expect an offensive coordinator to be able to come in and fix a quarterback or work with a quarterback in the course of just a few games. And it's not always that simple. So just like you saw with Aaron Rodgers, who is having a much different year this year than he had last year, the Falcons situation, and I think maybe Tom Brady right now.
All right, is this move by the Texans a sign of more to come? That's next. All right, so the Texans did take care of some business on Friday. It was announced there was a mutual parting of the ways with wide receiver Kenny Stills. Kenny Stills, who was banged up for the New England game, played a few snaps, but was banged up, played the second half, he spent in street clothes, and then he was on the injured list all week, didn't travel to Detroit, and then by Friday, Seth, he is no longer a Houston Texan. He will have a place in history with the Houston Texans. He was part of one of the biggest and most controversial trades of the Bill O'Brien era. I would say a trade that, of all the trades where we went kind of, ugh, this is the one that's probably worked out the best, I would say, giving up the two first-rounders and a second for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills. But the other two trades were Clowney and Hopkins, so it is what it is. But Kenny Stills released, which means for sure now more snaps for Kiki QT. DeAndre Carter, he was released a week ago as well. Do you think this is something where, I don't know, just I guess specific to the Stills thing, what was your reaction when you saw Kenny Stills released by the Texans?
I thought this was probably, and I saw it described as a mutual parting of the ways. Like when you hear about two people that break up and you hear that it was a mutual parting of the ways, I think there's usually a certain amount of skepticism. This one, I don't feel all that much skepticism, because I think it's clear that, for one, Kenny Stills can look at this and be unhappy with the number of targets he's getting, but still also understand that, yeah, they signed Randall Cobb, they traded for Brandon Cooks, and Will Fuller has been healthy. And I think that the big X factor in all of that with the wide receiver situation this year, right, was going to be, can Will Fuller stay healthy? If yeah. not, then you got Kenny Stills / Randall Cobb there as a backup scenario. And so far, the Texans haven't needed that. And I think that this is an opportunity. And they tried to reportedly trade him before the trade deadline. Nobody wanted to pay his salary, so now presumably he'll make it through waivers and somebody will try to pick him up on the cheap for the last few games and he can maybe get some good film.
Yeah, you know, Kenny Stills, when he first came here in that trade, I know there were some that were like, wow, that's interesting, the Texans trading for a guy who kneels during the national anthem. But I think as we've learned, the Texans, I think, over the last year or so, are probably a more progressive team in terms of their overall thinking in that realm. I would also point out that if anybody's thinking, well, they got rid of Kenny Stills because he was no longer useful and he kneels during the anthem, Deshaun Watson knelt during the anthem on Thanksgiving morning. Like, it's not, I know it's a big deal to some people still. I don't think it's a big deal to the Texans really at all.
Right. And well, I just almost expected like a knee-jerk reaction from people, because yes. it seems whenever the Texans do anything, somebody's got to try to find some salacious twist to it somehow.
Right.
The thing with Kenny Stills would be, yes, they had him on the roster for two seasons, the better part of almost two full seasons, and his positions were known during this, so I don't think anybody can really fault the Texans one way or the other for any of that. Same way it went when, when they fired Amy Pelsic. a whole lot of, I saw people criticizing the Texans for firing a woman who was in that position. Well, not acknowledging that the Texans were the first person to hire a woman in that position. That's a problem with being first in the NFL, Sean, is that because everybody gets fired all the time in this business, if you're the first to hire somebody of a certain category, there's a very good chance you'll be the first to fire somebody of that category, too.
Yeah, no, that happened. As you know, Notre Dame is my school, and when they hired Ty Willingham, it was viewed as, oh, look at this, Notre Dame's hiring a black coach. This is amazing, and Notre Dame's getting hailed for breaking the glass ceiling for black coaches at Notre Dame, et cetera. And then 3 years in, he was awful, and they fired him. They go, look at Notre Dame firing a black coach.
Typical Notre Dame.
Right? like they inherited the football program from some other school and then fired the guy or something.
Like when they had the black leprechaun for the first time,
they
right?
They did.
And
I like that.
And then you find out there's no actual pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yes.
They pulled the rug out from underneath them.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. So
that
so,
kid, yeah, and then that kid didn't last long, did he? Oh, he graduated. Okay, whatever, Notre Dame. Whatever.
So we're going to see more Kiki QT. Maybe Isaiah Coulter gets on the field. We're starting to see more spots open for some of these guys, which I think is good. Did you see in the game on Thursday, Sharping, there was they were almost doing, it felt like a three-man rotation with the guard spots. They had Kelamete in there for Zach Fulton this time around, which is good. They're 4-7. They actually made their way onto the graphic that said they're in the hunt, the Texans. But in my heart of hearts, knowing what reality is, the main thing I'm looking for the rest of the year is for some of these young players to start to get some traction for whoever the next head coach and general manager is. So, yeah, they've started to, either through injury or in this case getting rid of Kenny Stills and DeAndre Carter, they're starting to open up some spaces for these guys.
And that is between Kenny Stills and those other guys, Kiki QT, Isaiah Coulter, potentially. You've got to figure out what you have with these guys. Yeah. I think you're doing the next general manager a disservice if he comes in here and he doesn't have any film on these guys. We're going to ask some GM to be making decisions on college kids who have played sporadically in a fewer number of games this year, or some of whom haven't played at all, not to mention the young guys on your roster who haven't played. I think as much information as you can get, the better. Well, also, frankly, just still trying to compete, the Texans have not done a good job developing their rookies this year. We've seen this week after week where other teams have guys from the mid rounds that are producing on their squads, and the Texans have not. Start getting some production out of these guys. And also, Sean, it doesn't happen a lot, but some new coaches that come in do decide to keep some of the position coaches. Right. And that happens from time to time. Shoot, one of the guys we're looking at, Matt Eberflus, is a potential head coach candidate, was already hired and in place before Frank Reich took over. So I think maybe what John Perry, the receivers coach, can get out of some of these young guys, what any of these other position coaches can do, they might end up having themselves not having to move in the offseason if they do a good job with these guys.
Yeah, it's a great point. Everybody's performing for whoever's making these decisions going forward, including the position coaches.
I thought about that after the flea flicker.
Oh yeah,
or after the flea flicker, which was kind of ad-libbed because Duke Johnson had said, well, if there's pressure, I'm going to keep it. Yeah. And then halfway through the play, they realized it was still dead in the water, so Deshaun asked for the ball back politely,
right,
and he gave it to him. On the sideline afterwards, Danny Barrett, the running backs coach, was kind of like grabbing and shaking Duke Johnson playfully. But I knew exactly what was going on, or at least I'm guessing, which is, when a player does something like that, it's awesome if it works out. If it doesn't work out, Danny Barrett is sitting there saying, Duke, I've got to explain to some future employer what the hell happened on that play there. But it actually worked out.
All right. The 10-year anniversary of one of the greatest moments in Texans history was over the weekend. We need to relive it, though. On a Monday, we do it. Next. It is a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Reaction Monday, even though the game was on Thursday. Because, as I pointed out in the previous segment, this is a show of optimism. And the Texans, for the first time in a long time, they actually showed up on a graphic showing the playoff picture in the AFC. Granted, they were at the bottom of the far right column in the hunt, but you take what you can get in 2020. And they've won two in a row. They've won three out of their last four, and a wounded Indianapolis Colts team comes to town this weekend. They got waylaid at home by the Tennessee Titans yesterday, so we'll see if the Colts are angry or if they are just getting ready to, if Phillip Rivers is getting to regress to the mean here as the Colts fall to 7-4 and the Titans take control of the division. Seth, there was an anniversary over the weekend on Saturday. There was an anniversary of one of the greatest events in Texans history. It happened Thanksgiving weekend a decade ago. It was a 10-year anniversary of the moment. If there's any moment in Texans history that they should ultimately build a statue for in front of NRG Stadium, it's this one.
Derek Ward in the game, the lone back shot under center, third and 8 at the 41 of Tennessee. Handoff Ward, flagged down, running right, and brought down across the 35-yard line. And now Andre Johnson and Finnegan are going at it. Helmet comes off of Finnegan, and Andre Johnson's ejected. Andre Johnson lost his cool with Cortland Finnegan, and you know Cortland's just trying to get Andre Johnson upset. More fighting on the field. Big pushing, shoving action. And Andre Johnson wants more. Somebody's got to hold him back. A big pileup at the 40-yard line. A lot of pushing and shoving, and somebody's got to pull Andre Johnson out. Jeff Fisher at midfield with Cortland Finnegan trying to keep him out of it, and this thing is not even broken up officially yet as Antonio Smith is in the mix, Jason McCourty in the mix, and now peace prevails for the moment. Flags everywhere. And Andre Johnson close to the sideline now, but he is far from cool as he almost went back into the melee for more action. And you know there's going to be some kind of action from the league on what went down with Andre Johnson and Cortland Finnegan.
Okay, I know I let that run long, but Seth, I know you grew up in a part of the country where hockey is a big deal. There are very few things more underrated in the play-by-play realm than the play-by-play of a gigantic bench-clearing hockey brawl, like where the announcer is having to take a look at like three different sub-fights going on. And I think deep down, Mark Vandermeer probably enjoyed doing play-by-play for that. You know, Mark's a Northeast guy originally, probably did some play-by-play for hockey at some point along the way. I would think that's if you have any hockey in your blood, that's an announcer's dream. And that's what that was. That was, for those who, maybe new to Houston or whatever, maybe not up to speed, Andre Johnson, on this day, Saturday that is, 10 years ago, beat the snot out of Cortland Finnegan with his bare hands on the field. He emasculated a man.
And Cortland Finnegan deserved it. I think that a lot of people, even in Tennessee, I've heard that a lot from Tennessee fans over the years who, you know, in moments of rare sobriety or clear-headedness, they'll say, hey, yeah, Cortland Finnegan was kind of a pain in the ass. And not like in a Pat Beverly sense either, where Beverly will annoy people by going hard all the time. Finnegan was going hard, like, after the whistle. He would not be good as a football player during the play, but then he'd keep needling guys after the whistle. And, you know, I think Finnegan after that probably thought, like, yeah, I got him. That's exactly what I wanted. Even though the Titans ended up just not doing anything at all in that game anyway. It was nice to see. It was something that was a long time coming for Cortland Finnegan.
Cortland Finnegan is what we call in the wrestling parlance, Seth, a chicken bleep heel. You know, he's a bad guy, but he's the kind of bad guy that is just, he's underhanded. He's dirty. He's the type of heel that would go hit somebody from behind and then go hide behind a bigger guy and look over his shoulder. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like that,
okay,
kind of,
yeah,
guy,
yeah.
That kind of guy. My memories of that game, that was actually the first game that Amy and I ever went to as a couple. We went to that game 10 years ago. This was the first, she's been a season ticket holder in the bullpen since 2002. So that was the first game that I ever went to with her. We sat in her seats, and I don't remember the game all that well because I was hammered. We were up in the club level bar when that went down, that fight. The fight went down in the third or fourth quarter. It was the second half sometime. So the game was a blowout, as you alluded to. The Texans shut the Titans out that day, which I remember that too. Rusty Smith threw three interceptions, all to Glover Quinn. And we were up in the club area paying no attention to the game. Like I said, it was our first football game we went to, so I'm sure I was just dropping all kinds of game on her, some serious lines, really smooth. And all of a sudden, there was this murmur in the club level, like, Like there was a bomb threat or something like that. Like there was just everything started humming and moving, and everybody you could tell something was going on. And then you look up the TV, you go, oh, that's what's going on. Andre Johnson just ripped Courtland Finnegan's helmet off and is pounding his face into oblivion with his fists. It was wild. It was kind of some really awesome chaos going on for, you know, just for a garden variety Sunday afternoon for a team that wasn't very good that year. It was pretty cool.
It was Finnegan that year too. In 2010, somebody must have been giving him some kind of evil pep talks or whatever, or maybe that was when, you know, somebody told him, "Hey, you've got to be the scrappy guy that nobody takes, you know, everybody underestimates." Because in September of that year, he was fined $5,000 for throwing Steve Smith to the ground by his helmet. So I'll hand it to Courtland Finnegan. Either fearless or no sense at all about who he picks fights with. Because I feel like if you were to run across Steve Smith in a bar today, Steve Smith might do something about what happened in 2010. Then in October of that year, he was fined $10,000 for unnecessary roughness after hitting a Broncos guard, Chris Cooper, after Cooper's helmet was off. So he went after Steve Smith. Then he went after Chris Cooper, a guard for the Broncos. And then in November, he was doing this month by month by month. November, he just antagonizes Andre Johnson until Andre Johnson shows him what's up.
Yeah, no, Andre got him good. He got him good.
The problem with Courtland Finnegan is he's that kind of kid that growing up, you think like, oh, man, this kid just needs to have his ass beat. And then the kid has his ass beat. And he keeps acting the exact same way.
Work.
All right, well, where do we go from here? I don't know.
What do you do now? I also barely remember that game because on the way home, we took a cab. We went back to Amy's apartment, which ultimately became my apartment too. But at the time, it was not. And on the way back, we had the cab stop at Jack in the Box. And for two people, one of whom was a woman, we bought $29 worth of fast food at Jack in the Box.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty classy.
Factor in inflation, and that's probably like $31, $32.
At least $32, yeah.
That's what you went over. You spent more than three, I don't know, what's on a $10 bill? Is that Jackson? Hamilton?
I don't know.
Who the hell's on a 10? Is
I've
that Jefferson?
Actually,
I think it's Jefferson on a 10.
I actually have cash in my pocket for the first time.
You gave him three Jeffersons for...
three Jeffersons.
In $2,020.
Hang on.
2020.
Hold on a second here. $10 bill. Who is this cat?
Flashing the tens.
Who is that cat?
You're flashing the tens all
Yeah, that is Jefferson.
You don't know him on sight?
Yeah, actually, I don't. They all look the same. They've got that hair.
Come on, my eyes don't work. He's got his name underneath them.
I know, my eyes, Seth.
What the hell?
Oh, it's Hamilton. It's Hamilton.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Are you telling me that Hamilton isn't a dead ringer for Jefferson? Come on now.
That's why it's the Hamilton.
They all look like this. They all look like this.
No. Hamilton's a good-looking dude. That's probably the most handsome of guys that are on a denomination, aren't they? That's a pretty good-looking guy, Hamilton, right there.
What do you think of the Jackson? Jackson looks like Peter Gammons. What do you think?
Yeah, he does. He does.
Jackson's on the 20.
Jackson doesn't look as – Jackson looks like – Jackson is another one that I feel like Jackson was a whole lot of yapping.
Yeah.
And that at various times in Andrew Jackson's life, people were like, all right, somebody's just going to kick his ass. And they did, but then Jackson just kept yapping. Like Jackson was never going to back up for nobody know how.
He's the Courtland Finnegan of bicentennial figures.
He was Andrew Jackson was a big fan of Sam Houston.
Oh, was he?
Okay. Yeah.
Good little trivia there.
It's a long and complicated history with Sam Houston and his relationship with Native Americans.
Seth, watch this low-key flex. Ben Franklin doesn't look like any of them. Look at that right there.
Ben Franklin, the ugliest of everybody that's on U.S. currency and yet ends up with the $100 bill.
Full disclosure, the reason I have three Benjamins in my pocket is because that is my Christmas shopping money from Amy's parents. That's their MO.
Oh, really? They gave you cash?
They give Amy and I cash, and they say go shop, but then wrap the presents and bring them over to their house so we have stuff to open under the tree. You know what I mean? They're like, here's some money, go buy your own thing, and so that's how we do it.
You know what? Okay, real quick question. This is where the currency gets stupid. Just take a stab at who you think was on the $1,000 bill back when that was still a thing.
Let's see. Not Lincoln.
Don't even bother. It was Grover Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
How the hell's Grover Cleveland end up on the $1,000 bill?
I was going to say
that's
Joe
why,
DiMaggio.
That's why we're in the, that's we're in the state we're in right now. Grover Cleveland on the $1,000
bill. On the $1,000 bill, yeah.
Yeah.
Joel Dreesen did not like my recount of this game on Twitter, apparently. The Andre Johnson beating the... Because I listed my main memories from the game. I listed like four of them. And Joel Dreesen, former Texans tight end, he retweets and he goes, Sean, I scored a touchdown in that game. Apparently, it probably wasn't that memorable. Something along those lines. What did he say?
He said that ass-whipping was overdue. Talking about Cortland Finnegan. Yeah, as we recounted, the ass-whipping was overdue.
Right.
Dre felt really bad after the game for losing his cool like that, though. Such a class act. I caught a touchdown pass that day, too, but that's forgettable when drinking.
And it was. I was
Is Joel Dreesen doing radio in Denver right now?
I don't think he is. I don't know what exactly he's doing. He's not in Denver. I think he's in Colorado, but I think he has land. You know what I mean? I think he's more of he's kind of a...
Is he a cattleman?
I don't know if he's a cattleman. He's more of a gamesman. You know, he's more of a hunting fishing type than a rope and dogies type. Yeah.
I'm watching Yellowstone right now, and I've
decided... Oh, where are you? Where are you in it?
A cattleman. I'm at the unrealistic part.
Oh, that part.
Yeah, that part of it.
What season are you
I'm
in?
At the part where everybody's trying to get each other's land.
Hey, spoiler alert, that doesn't end.
Yeah. I'm rounding the bases. I'm rounding third base on the first season.
Okay.
I think I've got one or two episodes left.
I'm
at the part where Beth has alcohol issues.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that doesn't help. that doesn't end either. My assessment of Yellowstone, this is not a spoiler alert, it is a lot like Breaking Bad in that it's very dysfunctional family centric, as a lot of, I think, these dramas are these days. The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Yellowstone is of that ilk. It's like Breaking Bad in that it gets better each season. So if you like season one, Seth, if you like season one, you're going to love season two, and you're going to really love season three. My opinion.
I feel like I'm signing on for a whole bunch of stress.
Yeah.
Just like with Ozark and Breaking Bad, those shows, I would end up losing sleep over the main characters and my concern for them. I'm starting to feel that way about Yellowstone, except that I think in Yellowstone, you really get the sense that every single character is a bad person deep down.
Yeah.
So I don't worry as much about it. Like, I look at any of these characters other than the kid and basically think, like, they kind of deserve it. They get off.
I can't watch Yellowstone without
thinking. And I'll give the kid time.
Yeah. I can't watch Yellowstone without thinking, that's Kevin Costner. He gave me a purple nurple on Radio Row at the Super Bowl one year in New York.
He grabbed my
left nipple, and he twisted it during an interview.
Like you were one of his massage therapists.
Practically
or something.
Assaulted me. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson, Seth, you and I talked about something last Friday with Deshaun. We did that new game that we're playing where in a 4-7 season, it's more fun to read into audio than it is to actually dig back into games. Although the Texans are winning now, so it's more fun to dig back into games. That said, Deshaun Watson said this about playing for Romeo Crennel following the game last Thursday. Here's what Deshaun had to say.
He's just letting us play ball, letting the coaches, you know, do what they do, let them call the plays and not interfere with that, you know, and just let us, you know, go out there and just try to make plays as much as we can. And that's the point of the game. Of course, we want to, you know, make sure we're, you know, being conservative in some certain spots, but at the same time, hey, we got to go out there and put up points and let our guys, you know, let the talent, you know, take over. So that's what they've been doing.
Okay, so he said that. I did what I do, which is take lighter fluid to that and try to turn it into a bonfire and saying, oh, he said the word interfere, and boy, that sure does sound like a little bit of shade at O'Brien. You were the voice of reason. You tried to, I think, kind of talk me, you know, into a more reasonable view. They're like, no, that's just Deshaun's assessment of it.
Well, but I will say that I do, look, I believe the stories.
Sure.
That we're told about O'Brien kind of, well, we know for sure that Deshaun Watson said at the beginning of this season that it would be nice to have the offensive coordinator in the room all the time because last year he didn't get as much face time as he would have liked with Bill O'Brien. The other part of that whole story would be that O'Brien was still kind of micromanaging, but from a distance,
right,
and that Tim Kelly would be trying to install the offense, and then O'Brien would swoop in and change things, and it made it really difficult to operate. So I think that part, I believe that part of it. I just don't know for sure that Deshaun was trying to throw shade when he made that statement.
We weren't sure what was in Deshaun's heart when he had that answer, for sure. Now, you tell me, when you go on social media and you like something, that's not an in-the-moment thing. You make a decision to do that. Nobody's hitting you with a question in front of cameras. So I'm just going to say what happened on Friday, and then I'm going to ask you to interpret it. There was a tweet that showed Will Fuller doing the old slime finger under the nose thing, and the tweet said this: Will Fuller is currently on pace for 1,365 yards. Brandon Cooks is currently on pace for 1,045 yards. The Houston Texans have never had 2,000-yard receivers in the same season. I retweeted that, and I commented, Bill O'Brien just threw his drink at this tweet. And my implication was that O'Brien probably read that tweet and said, yeah, see, this is what I was doing with my layers and layers of players, and I got fired after four games. So that was my implication, that Bill O'Brien just threw his drink at this tweet. It was retweeted 144 times and liked by over 2,400 people, including on Friday, one Deshaun Watson. What are we to read into Deshaun Watson liking Sean Pendergast's tweet about Bill O'Brien throwing his drink at a tweet about two potential 1,000-yard receivers?
I don't know, Sean, because honestly, I feel like a lot of people interpreted your tweet a lot of different ways. I think that because just you saying that and meaning that doesn't necessarily mean that that's how everybody interpreted that. That True. Could be Bill O'Brien just being angry at the situation, Bill O'Brien being furious at whoever wrote the tweet from the Houston Texans or right. what have you. I don't know. So I was trying to figure out if Deshaun is liking that tweet, is he saying, you could interpret Deshaun liking it as saying, yeah, see, O'Brien was right in doing what he did. Or you could also interpret it as him saying, like, ha, 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 O'Brien's miserable and I'm happy because of it.
How do you
choose? Or it might just be, I honestly don't know because I was like, how is that necessarily shade at Bill O'Brien? I guess if you're saying that, well, Bill O'Brien, if he were running the offense, wouldn't have gotten those 1,000 yards. Because really, the big difference is just that Will Fuller is healthy. That's been they easily could have done this at any point with DeAndre Hopkins over the last few years if Will Fuller had just stayed healthy.
Yeah, if you're anti-Bill O'Brien, then the interpretation of this tweet is O'Brien sitting on his couch with probably 4 months or 4 weeks worth of growth on his face.
Yeah.
Bitter about being fired and throwing a drink, you know, his eighth drink of the morning at this tweet. You know, that's if you skew towards the side of being anti-O'Brien. My feeling on a set is Deshaun just doesn't strike me as a guy who wants to jump into the Twitter fray and just start throwing shade at people. I think he's very active on social media. I don't know that he's active to the point where he's going to throw shade at his former head coach unless it was just that bad. And Deshaun's like, I'm going to like it. Maybe a few people, more than a few people noticed that he liked it, by the way.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I guess when you're at Deshaun's level, you understand that when you like something,
yes.
right or wrong, people are going to read into it. So
right.
you're just jumping into the fray, whether you intentionally want to or not, you're aware of it.
Yeah.
I also think, Sean, that you might be selling yourself short in that he might have just been liking the tweet just to like the tweet because it presents a funny visual. And people love visuals. So if you have an image of Bill O'Brien like throwing a drink, how do you throw a drink at a tweet? You throw it at your phone or your desktop or what have you? Like, that's a funny visual. If you're sitting there, usually if you throw a drink, you're throwing it in somebody's face because they just made an indecent proposal or they offered you too little money for whatever you're selling them. Or if you throw the whole drink, if you throw it at a person, that's assault. Usually if you throw the whole drink, you're throwing it either on the floor or into a fireplace.
Right.
But to throw it at your phone, that's just funny.
Right.
Because then you're dousing yourself in it, too. I think he liked the visual of Bill O'Brien throwing a drink at his phone.
That's what we're going with. Sounds good. Two more teams making changes. Now where do the Texans head coach and general manager jobs stack up in the NFL? We'll hit that next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.